I hope to break out of this funk this week.
He has been wanting to wield the band hammer.
That format looks like it's terrible. I know it's terrible.
God, that's such a personal thing.
I looked him in the face and said, is that a serious question?
I can't think of a more powerful effect than that.
A dramatic market for rare basic lands.
Gideon should have been gone in 3 weeks.
Change is hard for old people.
Your bracket may already be busted, or maybe you're on your way to an office pool championship. Either way, we'll bounce past it to you tonight here on Try Hards. I'm Sean Seacrest, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Matt, what are you drinking as we get things started?
Some good old Hopscape. There's a few of them left in the fridge. My girlfriend's back in Quincy. She's back in Sean's stomping ground right now. She found out that the liquor store there has a couple sixers left of Hopscape. So I'm drinking these up, and I'll refill when I go up there this weekend.
Brian, what about you?
I am enjoying some of the Pipeworks Brewing Company's Lizard King. You know how I like a good hoppy beer, Sean and Hurley? Well, I was in Chicago this past weekend and picked up a four-pack. Comes in the big can, so... That plus Ninja versus Unicorn, two of my big favorites, so might be swapping them out tonight.
I'm with the Odd Side Ales again this evening. I had some when we were on the other night talking about the Patreon. We're going to talk a little bit more about that tonight. The Odd Side Ales Hop Gobbler Extra Pale Ale. It's kind of an IPA and a pale ale got together, and I really like their intersection and interpretation of those two styles. That's what we've got. We hope you've got something delicious as we're about to unfold this episode of Tryhards. Have you locked in your new DCI number? We'll get to all that and more coming up here this evening. Guys, what magic did you play this week? Matt, I'm going to start with you because I know you've been working online still.
Six leagues, I think, last weekend of Modern. Girlfriend was out of town, so I really didn't have anything to do. Didn't feel like going down to the LGS. Sean watched a few of these leagues. It confirmed what I suspected about Modern. It's an awful format. There is no freaking consistency in that format whatsoever. You just have to play. It's like playing through the first two rounds of a GP all the time.
That's what makes the format so darn good. There's no consistency. I don't want to see the same decks all the time. I mean, then just play standard. I don't know.
Well, if you were looking for the same three decks all the time, standard is still your province, but there may be something to be said about that after the banned and restricted announcement today. We'll get to that in just a bit. But Matt, you're just echoing what we've talked about here on the show before, and that's that the grinder mindset or pro mindset is that when the field is too wide, there's no edge to be had. I think it's refreshing as a player to not have to play the same three decks. Let's say you're in a nine-round day one, and you only see three different or unique decks, and then the other six rounds are against the three known commodities. Yeah, I guess that can be interesting from a certain point of view, but I'm also all for the variety point of view that Brian's talking about.
And I can agree with that to a certain extent, but it just seems like you said, I understand where the pros are coming from, saying this format is kind of too wide open. It's fun to play, but there's something to be said that say, okay, this is a good coverall in my sideboard, but it's such a heavily sideboard format. The difference between tier 1, tier 1.5, and tier 2 decks, and I think this is the issue of why you have so many, is very small. It's not like Legacy where your tier 1 decks and your tier 1.5 decks are semi-close, and then your 1.5 and 2 decks are just worlds apart. I would love to have a happy medium in there where if you're playing a tier 2 deck, you know, maybe you got 2 percentage points below what the rest of them have, but that just means there's so many decks in the format you can't prepare for them all. So if I'm playing for fun or whatever, yeah, I totally can see playing it, but if I'm playing for any sort of EV or any tournament, I just can't see it as a format.
We don't want to beat this horse to death because we're going to come back and talk more about Modern when we get into the tournament news. Brian, what magic did you play this week?
Yep, zilch.
Brian, still consistent with his contribution to this section of the show.
I am so consistent. I am absolutely so consistent by not playing Magic. So I hope to break out of this funk this week, guys. That's my pledge.
Well, this coming weekend's a good weekend to do it. Modern Masters 2017 is going to be available. It is kicked off a month of Modern is the theme at my LGS. So everything that isn't a Modern Masters draft is going to be a Modern event this month. starting with what this past Friday's FNM was. I played Jeskai Control, and there wasn't really anything interesting about the magic that was actually played. That's not to say there weren't interesting things going on at the FNM. Let's start with the fun and then get into the, well, moment that as one regular listener and regular participant at the LGS said, nearly caused me to lose my ambassadorship status here on Tryhards. If you ever go to an FNM or a Magic event and end up where the most memorable thing isn't about Magic at all, this is what makes the community so much fun. Two of the guys at the shop, Nate and Swanson, were talking. I was talking to Nate. Nate's kind of a slight guy. He's, I'd say, about 5'9", 150 pounds. And Nate has a passion for kind of funky roll neck sweaters. So he was wearing this roll neck button down cardigan, and we were remarking on how classy he looked in it. And Swanson said, "Hey, can I try that on?" And Nate said, "Sure." Well, Nate's 5'9", 150, maybe 155. Swanson's 6'2", 260. So Nate takes the sweater off, gives it to him. Swanson not only puts it on, but then proceeds to give it every Mr. Olympia flex pose known to America as he's just stretching out poor Nate's sweater all over the place. And then just gives it back to him. And, oh, I mean, there's a simile that I want to make, but I'm going to go with used diaper instead. And it was just one of those moments that was just so hilarious. And Nate knew what he was getting into and took it in stride. He's like, "Yeah, one trip through the washer and dryer, it'll be back to form." So that was the most sort of laughable and memorable thing that night. The other thing that happened was in round two, I was playing against a young man who was there with a homebrew. He was playing a homebrewed green-red werewolves deck in Modern, and which is fine. We were having a good round in round two until it was time for him to cut my deck for the pre-match shuffle. This gentleman picked it up, turned it upside down, and then started mashing the openings of the top into the butts on the bottom. And I'm just like wincing and cringing. And he noticed, and I said, "Just, you know, go easy. Go easy. You know, the sleeves will slide together if you go in from the side." Well, he didn't really understand what that was. And so he set the deck down, split it apart, and looked like he gripped it like he was ready to riffle shuffle it. And I just reached my finger out and put it in his face and said, "No! You will not riffle shuffle that deck." So at this point now, everyone in the room is looking, and every time he has to, there were times that I didn't fetch so that I didn't have to pass him my deck to handle it one more time. It was just awkward, wow. And we got to talking about it afterwards. He even said to me at one point, he said, "I'm sorry, I'm trying to kind of handle it the best I can." He goes, the corner of your eye is kind of involuntarily twitching, so I'm just going to put it down and just cut." I said, "That's more than acceptable, especially at an FNM. Just kind of cut the deck in half, and I'll put it back together." So after the match, we were talking about it, and he said, "You know, he's playing naked, right? No sleeves, homebrewed green-red werewolf deck." And he said, "You know, I just didn't really think about it. Like, my deck's probably worth like $4 all told." And one of the guys who was sitting next to him leans over, because I've got all un-basics in my stuff. He's like, "His basics are like $10 a piece." It brought up that moment to where you have to do some teaching with people that on proper etiquette, and etiquette is often more than the game itself. So I think he kind of had a better handle on it by the time we were done, and all my cards survived the mauling in that round and survived into round three. So that was good, but just be patient with people who don't have the same experience level background, whether it's playing the game, handling the social aspects of the game, or even just handling cards in a manner that isn't going to damage them, because some people are from the extreme end of the kitchen table spectrum that just have $10 invested in the game and riffle shuffle their cards without sleeves, and that's just the way it is. And don't feel afraid to speak up, but don't do it in a manner in which you're going to be derogatory or sort of tear them down. There's an education to be had there as well. I think coaches, Tibbetts, you used to coach all the time. Teaching moment, right? It's a teachable moment.
It's absolutely a teachable moment. It's and one of the things that I've been adopting more often lately is teach more on the field, coach more in the classroom. There's something to be said about that. Our football coaches kind of adopted that mantra, and I think it's actually really good advice. It's okay to just kind of get up in somebody's face when you have to make that point. Like, "Hey, it's okay for me to riffle shuffle my deck. it's not okay for you to ripple shuffle my deck. That's just not what you do. You know, you cut it, file shuffle where it's just real loose and everything like that. That's fine. But the riffle shuffle, God, that's such a personal thing. And those cards, he's got to have some sense of, you know, what the card values are in Modern. So, yeah, I'm totally, totally fine with what you did. I don't know about the finger in the face necessarily. I hope that's a little hyperbolic on your part.
But, no, it wasn't.
You don't want to wag it, but, well, you know, I get it.
I wasn't wagging it. I just kind of pointed that I might have got a little close. It was either that or I was going to slam my hand out on his wrist so that he couldn't move when he was about to do that. And I didn't think that would be DCI approved. So
were you going to rub his nose in it too, Sean?
No, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. I came up short, and I thought I handled it actually just fine. But that was the most memorable moment from F&M this week. Plenty of tournaments to get to. Lots of news on this episode as well. Let's jump right in with both feet to the state of Jersey. That's right, GP Jersey and all of its secret tech trying to elude us on tryhards. Standard had 1,627, a loaded top eight. Ben Friedman, Paul Rietzel, Ben Stark, Jarvis Yu, Brandon Ayers, Corey Baumeister, and yes, Corey won it. He let loose the cats. His cats were apparently more coordinated and better fighters than Ben Friedman's cats were, as it was the all crazy cat lady showdown, and Baumeister won it 2-1. Guys, outside of the loaded top eight and the fact that in the top eight, Mardu Vehicles had four of the eight decks, Cats had three, and then Jund Energy, just the one deck with Ben Stark, this was a very interesting top eight. I think, Matt, where was Tamer Tower? This one was supposed to be on the come, and it was nowhere. And Aetherworks Marvel sort of had a little bit of a rebound as well. Of course, it's hard for us to break down any more information than that, because as of this recording, if you try to click on the 9 through 32 deck lists on Wizards, they tell you you're not eligible to see that site and access is denied. Are they just trying to keep us from solving the metagame too quickly, Matt?
No, I think this is just a Wizards ineptitude toward technology. But I still think Tamer Tower is a good deck. They even mentioned an abandoned restricted. Can it topple all of the top threes? I don't know. It's an interesting deck for sure. The one thing I absolutely hated, they cut from Barcelona and they cut directly into Jersey. So you missed the first probably 4 hours of Jersey. To me, that is just crazy, especially when you have broadcasting on both sides. Why not separate them into two different showings, you know, on Twitch, a Magic Europe channel and a Magic North American channel or something like that? Why do that with the coverage? I just don't understand. It did get a little stale seeing Mardu on Mardu, you know, black-green on black-green, black-green on Mardu, and then the occasional Saheeli thrown in there. But I don't know, Brian, what do you think of everything? You think coverage was the worst part of it, or do you have any gripes about it?
You're asking me for the worst?
Yeah, I want to know the worst first, because I definitely think the coverage thing was ridiculous.
Well, no, I would agree with that. I feel like the resources could be expended to show both of them, especially with two GPs on the same weekend. No, I didn't think that was necessarily the worst. I think I'm just tired of seeing four-color copycat as the decks that and Mardu Vehicles, for that matter, as the decks that are snaking the top tables. No pun intended there for Black Green Delirium. I definitely was rooting for Ben Stark's Jund Energy deck. I feel like that was just like a breath of fresh air, and it was a great, great list. And then, you know, I watched him play it, and he's playing it, of course, the way Ben Stark should play that deck, tight and exactly as he should. But it just didn't have the legs to get past the four-color copycat. There was a really weird match in the semis. I don't know if you guys saw this or not. It looked like Ben Stark had the match locked up, and he was like in the middle of a turn. His opponent, I think it was Baumeister, just kind of flashed him a piece of the combo, and Stark just scooped. And it was just this weird thing, and the announcers were kind of like, wait, what just happened there? Who actually won that game? And it got sorted out. I was watching pretty closely so I could tell exactly what happened, but it was one of those things. I don't like it ever to be like I have this card, you lose format. It was a very, very specific thing that happened. So, yeah, that's the one thing that I'm hoping, you know, we've got to get some good brewers in here. We've got to get Todd Stevens, you know, focusing on Standard and see, you know, who's going to crack this nut, unseat some of these decks from the throne. The Tamer Dynavolt seemed to be, I think that was a great question, where was that this weekend? It showed up in some of the lists. Can't say if it's all in the 9 through 32 list, but I know it showed up in some of the top lists, and I'm looking forward to seeing that kind of make a resurgence again.
Let's round out our GP experience by looking across the pond to Barcelona. 1,265 players. Yes, Brian, Marcio Carvalho was there. Settle down now. This was an interesting metagame
eight,
as well.
Top eight?
This was an interesting metagame as well. That top eight with Carvalho was evenly split amongst Four Color Cats and Mardu Cars. You had Pete Sushurik on Four Color Cats take down Matthew Pope on Mardu Cars 2-1. But we did get to see the top 32 here. There was no Wizards website issue. It was heavy, heavy on Mardu Cars. There were a little bit of Team Tower in there to break it up. But what happened to Black Green Snake? David Brucker, you may remember that name. He was on Black Green Constrictor for a top 8 finish at GP Utrecht just a few weeks ago. But he admitted when coverage asked him that it wasn't the best idea to run it back. He said he badly crashed and burned, failed to make day 2. He said before, Saheeli was your bad matchup and Mardu was your good matchup. Now, though, with Mardu's new strategy of becoming a control deck after game 1, you hardly ever win a post-board game against Mardu, so Black Green Snake, in his eyes, and this is a guy who finished top 8 at GP Utrecht just a few weeks ago, he said Black Green Snake literally has no good matchups left in the top decks in Standard. Is Tamer Tower sort of ready to take the spot that Black Green Constrictor had had at the big boy table amongst the top 3, Matt? You've done the most work with the deck. Is it poised for a breakthrough now that it seems the consensus is that Black Green Snake no longer has the power necessary to compete, and the Black Green decks that were doing well actually adopted more of a Delirium strategy?
Also, with the Mardu vehicle ones, they're going more towards mid-range for sure. And so I think in this format as it sits right now, I think he's being a little hyperbolic there where saying, you know, green-black is not that good. It's still a pillar of the format. Maybe the particular one he was playing was the one that he's talking about not being that good. Overall, I think Tamer Tower is kind of, I would say, the fourth leg of the formats. There's still some tweaking to be done there. I do think if there was a big standard tournament I was going to in the next few weeks before Amonkhet releases, I think that I would definitely take Tamer Tower. The format changes, and you know, we had talked about this a few episodes ago where all these decks are kind of, they're not getting inbred, but they're starting to kind of prey upon themselves a little bit. So I think if somebody went back to kind of the black-red hyper-aggressive decks or the blue-red dredge decks, I think either one of those are pretty well positioned right now because these other decks are semi-slow at this point. So I think that the timing of Modern Masters this year couldn't be more perfect because it's going to stop that little bit of, you know, standard fatigue with the same decks over and over. Brian, what do you think about that? Do you think that standard's kind of stale and that's good timing for Modern Masters?
Absolutely stale. I mean, when you're talking about 3 decks and really 2 decks being the pillars of the format and the third one is kind of trying to inch its way up there, that to me is a little, is the real reason why I think Modern is such a great format. I don't see it as such a pessimistic thing, Hartley, what you were saying earlier. I love the fact that you can win with anything, and there are a lot of different things that can take a tournament down. It's not just going to be 1 or 2 different decks. It's going to be littered with many, many things. So I feel like if you're in the top 8, if you're in the top 16, you've got a reasonable chance to win the tournament. You're not going to meet anything in that top 16 or top 8 that you haven't seen before in the tournament. So Standard is getting kind of stale. Modern Masters coming out this coming weekend, I think, is actually going to be a nice breath of fresh air. Modern is at an all-time high in popularity, and people are going to really, I think, throw down to pay for drafting this set a lot and doing some sealed things. I'm even noticing some things in my general area that are like, it's a Modern tournament, Modern win a box of Modern Masters, which I haven't seen before. I think there's a little bit more hype coming up, and just getting people interested in the game will allow Amonkhet to come in, breathe some new life into Standard, and I think that's going to be a good thing for everyone.
Taking a look at the 9 through 32 list at GP Barcelona, the first real innovation that comes to light are Shota Takao and Noru Inu's Black-Red Eldrazi list. Inu actually finished 20th with this. Brian, is this a sign that the format is stale and we're so desperate for something new that we're willing to sort of anoint this as innovation or do you have a more pessimistic view? Essentially, what he did was put Walking Ballista, Scrap Heap Scrounger, Matter Reshaper, Thought Not Seer, Reality Smasher, and PNLR into a deck with Fatal Push, Unlicensed Disintegration, and Heart of Kieran. Essentially, he just cut white from Mardu vehicles for Reality Smasher and Thought Not Seer, shored up the little bit of the mana base that can hiccup occasionally, and traded Gideon out for Reality Smasher. I mean, this is really just, in my mind, trading Gideon for Reality Smasher and calling it a day, and yet we have some in coverage running around calling this innovation. Now, did they do work and put this together? Obviously. But are we just bored of the format? Are we surprised when somebody passes on a pillar like Gideon for other cards? Or is this just a sign that we're really just waiting for Modern Masters to arrive?
Well, I've got to give props to somebody who's trying something new, because I think for a lot of the pros who actually have a stake in this, it's actually a lot harder than we think. We can sit here and talk all the time about, oh, man, I want to see something new. Why can't somebody win with something new? And then I look at somebody like, you know, Marcio Carvalho. I look at somebody like the top eight of New Jersey that you read off, Sean, which is a who's who of in the Magic world. These people know what they're doing. And if they think that Mardu or Four Color Copycat is the best deck, then that's what they're going to play. And if that's their best option to get them their payday, then yeah, who is it to me to see, well, I'm bored with that deck and yeah, it wins all the time, but whatever. No, I don't think that's the case at all. I really do like, having said all that, I really do like the black-red deck that they put together just because it does give us some cards that we haven't seen before. And we just forget about how many cards are in the card pool. And once we see that there is like, oh, hey, Eldrazi is still a thing. I mean, we know that it's a thing in Legacy. We know that it's a thing in Modern. But, of course, Thought Not Seer and Reality Smasher are real cards in Standard. And I think some people forget that. You know, what would you rather have, Reality Smasher or a Heart of Kieran? Personally, I'd rather have a Reality Smasher. There's just a lot going on there. PNLR is a fantastic card. Walking Ballista, sure, there's some good cards that are going to be across all kinds of different things. So I love the fact that people are taking just slightly different takes on this. And for the audience of Magic viewership, of which we are a large part, I think that's a good thing to expect. We expect some people to innovate and keep pushing the envelope, you know, week after week, even when there is another set on the horizon. I don't want to say that it's totally stale. I think it's just stale from a viewership standpoint. But if you're a pro, of course, you're going to pick the best deck that is going to get you that payout.
I think the consensus we've reached on the cast is that Standard was the medicine we had to take this weekend. So let's get to the sugar, baby. SCG had the Dallas Open, and it was Modern. It's what we spent most of the time really discussing already on the show. 856 players turned out. You couldn't watch this one until after the third round because some technical difficulties struck them in Dallas as well. In the end, it was Austin Bercevich on Jund Shadow, 2-0-ing Trent Avra on Burn. The top eight, double Jund Shadow, double Burn, Merfolk, Green-White Company, Bantdrazi, and Ad Nauseam. This was, as always, a diverse metagame in Modern. So, guys, I want to hear from each of you. Matt, you have been sort of poo-pooing the diverse metagame in Modern, and Brian's been all for it so far. How much do you think there is a metagame in Modern? What percentage of a tournament participates in that metagame as opposed to people just playing, quote, their deck or the deck that they have the cards for, and they don't really pay attention to the metagame and change with the ebbs and flows? Matt, this was on display again this weekend, where Burn was the most populous deck in Day 2 in Dallas, and most people aren't going to tell you that's the best deck in the format.
I think there's the boogeyman of the format, and that would be, it used to be Infect and Affinity, and now I think it's Burn, Death Shadow, and I guess to another certain extent, like the Grixis or the Saheeli combo decks, not necessarily the combo decks, but the control decks. Overall, I think it's mostly, when I say mostly, I would say probably 40 to 50% of the people are just playing their deck, you know, their fun deck that they made. You know, we played on stream, we played a league of red, green Ponza. That deck is terrible, but it was fun to play when I wasn't getting my face beat down.
Well, you just didn't shuffle it very well.
That's true. Online, I did not shuffle it very well. when we played that, what did we run into? Another red-green Ponza deck.
In game one, neither one of us really had any experience with it, and we played the mirror in match one.
It was just one of those things. I think everyone kind of plays what they consider fun, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's a good thing. It just makes for a very difficult competitive format, especially without buys. It makes it difficult to metagame, but I think overall it's a fun format for people to play just their deck.
Brian, same question to you. How much of a metagame do you see in Modern, and what percentage of people do you think participate in that evolving, revolving metagame at the tournament level as opposed to just playing their deck, whether it be because it's their project deck or it's just the deck that they have the cards for?
I think the first question is a lot easier to answer. The metagame for Modern is just, it just happens to be a lot wider. There just happens to be more decks in the metagame that you have to prepare for, I believe. And that's the big difference between Standard and Modern. If you are expecting to make, you know, a good showing at a Standard event, you're always going to have to prepare either your deck or your sideboard or both for four-color copycat, Mardu vehicles, green-black constrictor, and then some other, maybe a fourth deck. In Modern, you've got the gamut. You've got so many different things. And then you stop thinking about specific decks. You think about strategies. Well, am I going to see aggro decks like Death Shadow or Burn? Am I going to, or Merfolk for that matter? Am I going to see something of a more controlling style like a company deck? Or a combo like a Gifts or an Ad Nauseam kind of thing. Am I a big creature strategy, a Bant Eldrazi, Eldrazi Tron? The percentage that I think participate in that metagame is really, really hard for me to say, because Modern has been so popular and they've been selling out these tournaments. I think everybody goes in, not just I'm happy to be here, but you know, they're expecting to do well, even if it is with their pet deck. Maybe, I'm going to spike a tournament with my whatever. That's a fine strategy. People can do that. The people who are hardcore looking to cash out on event, I would say is what, 30%? 30% of a field maybe out of Dallas, I would say is really gunning for the quote-unquote wide metagame. The others really don't have a sense of what are the decks that they could be preparing for, nor would they have the experience of playing against all of those different kinds of decks just coming from Magic Online or from their LGS to, you know, have a real, real playtest backlog to prepare them for that stuff. But that's kind of the sense I get.
Bonus lightning round question. One sentence answer from each of you two. Will the release of Modern Masters 2017 this weekend widen the number of decks that the average player will be able to play in Modern, Brian?
No, not at all.
Matt?
Absolutely.
We'll see how that ends up playing out, as Wizards is going to give us a big bag of goodies. Christmas is coming early, right on the cusp of spring with Modern Masters 2017. There was a Standard Classic and a Modern Classic in Dallas. 100 players for the Standard Classic. Josh Newell on Red Green Energy defeated Mac Blancher on Teamer Tower. And in the Modern Classic, 188 players. This was a final I was glad I didn't have to watch. Jody Keith on Living End defeated David Daniel on Pure Steel Paladin. Yes, in the Modern Classic, the only deck with two copies in the top eight was Pure Steel Paladin. You want to talk about wide metagames, the widest of choices on display.
I was excited, though, guys, about the Classic, the Standard Classic. The Modern Classic, you're right. I was kind of like, whoa, that looks gross. But to have Red Green Energy and Teamer Tower in the finals of a Classic, I know most people are playing, you know, a Modern Open, and the really, really skilled players are not there. But still, for those two decks to make it to the finals, I think that was actually really cool.
I agree 100%. Like that's why I love paying attention to these all these side events. And you've heard me talk, you know, until I'm blue in the face about it. But pay attention to these side events, because there's some decks that might be 98% decks that pop up in there, or people are trying to, you know, tune their deck a little bit in a wider field. But I think that's awesome that these other decks are kind of popping up.
Put me in the column of people who doesn't give those smaller tournaments that are on Sundays while there are other major GPs going on a whole lot of credence. Good to see other things, but I'm not going to put my eggs necessarily in that basket. Time to get to the news that hit this week. And what a day to record this episode of Tryhards. It is another on the new and improved and increasingly common banned and rare announcement from Wizards. They made that announcement today. And let me see. I've got some notes here. Nothing to see. Move along. Move along. No one has any changes in any formats, anything from pauper to vintage to standard along the way. Wizards, though, rather played a little bit shy on this one and said, with Amonkhet so close, we're going to wait and see if that shakes up the format a bit with that Pro Tour really essentially right around the corner. Guys, your thoughts on the lack of any announcement from the banned and restricted list? Brian, I'll start with you because, Matt, I know you'll want to get into the financial ramifications of this non-announcement. Brian, any surprises here?
You know, if there was any surprise, I would say not banning Felidar Guardian out of standard. But as much as we're poo-pooing the standard metagame and the lack thereof as it being kind of the copycat, it's not putting too many decks in the top eight to where it's becoming an oppressive format. And I don't think anybody could argue against that. I think they probably left well enough alone right now, and I think that's a good idea, especially since you know, we have another one in, what, April coming up? Another banned and restricted announcement possibility in April. So they're probably just going to wait it out and wait for Amonkhet to hit and see what happens after that. I was surprised at the very first sentence when it said, R&D met earlier this month to review several formats, notably standard and vintage. And as somebody who doesn't play vintage, I was kind of like, I didn't even think that there might be a vintage banned and restricted list update at this moment. Obviously, they have to keep their eyes on all formats, so good for them. You know, that's something I need to be more aware of. And the vintage European Vintage Championships are coming up in April, so they'll have a lot more data to kind of suss out from there. So, yeah, I wasn't real surprised, I guess. Most of the stuff, I think, you know, that just shows how Hurley's wrong and Modern's a strong format, not having to do anything to Modern. And Standard, I think, is fine. It might be a little stale, but it's in no way skewed one way or the other like it was before they cut out the minivan and cut out the big crazy Eldrazi monster. I think that was a good move on their part to kind of leave well enough alone at the moment.
I bet you didn't know that Matt's middle name is Thor, because he has been wanting to wield the ban hammer for weeks and he's tried to get Wizards to bend to his will. All right, Matt, let's hear it. What should they have banned? Because I know you've got a list.
Gideon, 100%. The reason I say that is Gideon should have been gone in 3 weeks. I'm going to give Wizards the benefit of the doubt here and say that when they made Gideon and they balanced Gideon the way they did, they were planning on him being in standard until Amonkhet came out. I mean, after them missing the Saheeli combo, I don't know. Let's put it this way. I think they should have, but on the other hand, I'm glad that they didn't ban anything in standard. The reason I say that is because that would create a lot of instability within the standard formats. With that instability, it would have been a lot more difficult to get people to play standard. They would have been a little bit more unsure about standard because they're saying, well, why am I going to invest all this money in standard if, you know, all my cards are going to be banned in a few weeks? I'm happy they didn't ban anything because I do think it would have undermined, you know, the trust that they have with the community. But I still think that Gideon was a huge mistake in the format.
Yeah, we'll see. Wizards was walking a perilous tightrope coming off the triple ban in standard last time. And I could see they didn't want to get a reputation for going too far. They do have a window right after Pro Tour Amonkhet, as Brian mentioned, coming up in April. Matt, is there an obvious financial impact from the banned and restricted non-announcement today? We don't have to go super deep in the well. What are you hearing just hours after this announcement by Wizards?
You know, there's not a ton of, I guess, surprise there. The big thing is I think that Saheeli is going to go up a little bit more, and I think Gideon's going to start to creep up as well, especially as we get towards the late summer. It's going to creep up. It's going to hit a max, and then it's going to kind of drop off because it's going to rotate. But Gideon has already proved that it's powerful in every single format. I mean, it sees play in literally every format minus Vintage. Technically, there's really nothing going on the financial front with this. Outside of just those cards are going to stabilize and they're going to start to creep up. I'm really hoping Amonkhet brings us you know, something that, like, maybe Duress. Like, Duress would be a fine card if they brought that back. Hero's Downfall, something, you know, like instant speed removal for the Gideon. Maybe that make the control decks too good. I don't know with Torrential Gearhawk, but Financially, nothing is really super relevant right now.
This was another topic at the LGS Friday night. Someone actually looked at me with a straight face, pointed at my modern Jeskai control list and said, "Would you even play Jace if he was unbanned in that list?" I looked him in the face and said, "Is that a serious question? You're talking about the best Planeswalker of all time. Of course I'm playing Mind Sculptor if he gets unbanned in a control list."
What you would have to tell him again is you would have to kind of skew it toward a miracle build, because with that brainstorm ability, you could put and treat the angels on the top.
Yes. Yes, you could, Brian. Our resident
all right, don't
miracles
get crazy
player
with it.
Here on Tryhards. If you're into the details of set construction, Sam Stoddard on the Mothership did a very in-depth Modern Masters 2017 mailbag this last week. You can check that out on the Mothership. That came out, I believe it was on Friday the 10th. And if you're into articles about Magic's history, there would be no history without Richard Garfield. SCG's author Jeff Cunningham put together a two-part article. This came out originally a little while ago, but they just made it available for free on the Select side. Both parts together in one article. It is a lengthy read, but it is a Q&A interview about not only the development and the history of Magic, but where Richard Garfield, the man behind Magic, sees games going today. And if you've got 15, 20 minutes to go through this, it is absolutely worthwhile. Check it out. God of Magic, Jeff Cunningham's interview with Richard Garfield. Other than that, well, if we're looking forward to Modern Masters 2017 and we're looking forward to Amonkhet, of course Wizards is going to throw one more shiny thing in our path. They released the packaging for the new dual deck, and this has Matt batting his paw at it like a cat looking at a reflective surface. So, Matt, is that just the foil off the wrapper you can't get off your paw, or what's going on over there?
So I think this might be the highest-selling dual deck they'll ever have. With Jorah the Getu on the front, I can't see a world where they don't put Ancestral Vision in here. And these are selling, what's the MSRP on these, $25? With the Ancestral Vision in there, yeah, I think this is going to fly off the shelf. And this is on limited print run as well. So if they announce that that's in there, I mean, Ancestral Vision goes from a, you know, $35, $40 card to a $15 or $20 card overnight. And who knows, they may have Snowlands on Lavissa Coldeye's side. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of the background on it. Waiting to see at the end of the month if it comes out with Ancestral Vision. It comes out the 31st of March.
I didn't even think about the Snowlands with Lavissa Coldeye's. Isn't it interesting? She's red if they only reprinted the Snow Mountains. So Mountain then becomes, again, the most printed land ever, since it has the infamous Arabian Nights printing. And then you could get the dual decks only the Snowlands from the Lavissa Coldeye's side of it. This would be maybe a dramatic market for rare basic lands.
Well, the snow-covered mountains are already at a premium. They're about three or four times the price because of Scred Red.
It's because that's the only deck that plays snow-covered lands.
Yeah.
Before we move on to our In the Elevator, you know, Magic is more than just news. It's more than just tournament results. It's more than 260-pound guys wearing the sweaters of 150-pound guys. It's also managing your enormous and cumbersome Magic history online when you try to make sure that your DCI number is safe forever. Brian's been our canary in the coal mine, even though I was trying to do some of this today. Brian, what's your experience been? Because Wizards announced the changeover in their database tracking, and if you want to secure your DCI number and make sure that your whole history with Wizards stays accurate and intact, well, you have to spend what they described as 60 seconds on the website. I'm sure you found that to be totally accurate, right, Brian?
Mere minutes. Mere minutes. And, of course, we're into day, like, 2.5 on this. So, yeah, I have a DCI number, obviously, and just thought I would make a Magic account. So I thought they were going to ask me for something like a DCI number that I could then hook up to a Magic account. Turns out I already had a Magic account at some point. I don't know if I, in a drunken stupor, signed up for Magic Online or whatever. But they assigned me a different DCI number. When I logged in and put in my stuff, they said, "Here's your DCI number. Here's all your information. Here's your printable DCI card." And I'm thinking, wait a minute. I already have a DCI card. I already have a DCI number. Why would I want another one? Plus, I also like my old one better than this one, because we're old and change is hard for old people. So clicking around on the website, it was like, oh, do you have more than one DCI number? Do you have, you know, this is the FAQ. Do you have more than one account? You can combine them. Okay, great. Easy fix. So I clicked on it. And it said, log in with your other account information. Mm-hmm. Well, this as everybody knows, this is becoming the old story of, if you ever owned Apple products, this is the same thing. You know, well, what song, what under what Apple ID did you buy this song as opposed to every other song in your library? Because obviously it's different. Having gone through all of these maddening steps and being very, very frustrated to the point of scaring my children, I finally decided to email Wizards and just be like, listen, I have now two DCI numbers. I can't find my login information for this new one or this other account, apparently, that I have. So I would love to keep my old one. What can you do for me? Got a great, very nice email response back saying, our security is most important. I need your date of birth. I need what store you got your DCI card at, which I was kind of like, wow, they're going deep. I thought they were going to ask me for my blood type, which thankfully they did not. It's O positive, by the way.
As long as it's still hepatitis negative, I think you're fine.
It's definitely hepatitis negative. I'm waiting to hear back from them. I'm sure they'll come down with some, probably, oh, we wish we could save your old DCI number, but it's been resigned to the bin of history, etc. So I'm okay with that. As long as I have a working number and I'm able to play in events, that's good. But it was definitely not a mere minute or two. And that's what's a little frustrating about this. In 2017, they have to know that, just to kind of dismiss these things out of hand and say, of course it will only take a couple minutes. It's never that easy. It's just never that easy. So I foresee a good end to this. I don't foresee having to take this all the way up to the chain of command to go storming into Hasbro's headquarters and demand to see the customer service vice president, et cetera, but it is a little bit more work than I was preparing on doing this weekend, especially with the loss of the hour of sleep. I mean, I need all the help I can get here, people.
Yeah, if you've had a similar experience or a good one, let us know, because everything that Brian just described going through, I've been going through as well as I tried to jump on before the show tonight and take care of that in what's supposed to be, oh, just a couple of clicks and you'll be fine. No, it was not. I had to drink an extra beer because of that situation. So, Wizards, I'm going to need you to send me a check for $2.57. That was the 1/6 of the six-pack that I had just picked up today. That heads us right up to tonight's In the Elevator segment. Matt, you've already said there's no real ripples coming off the banned and restricted announcement today. So what do you got in the elevator there?
Kolaghan's Command. You can get them sub $10 if you're on TCG Player and you're doing some smart shopping, which that blows my mind for as heavily as it's played. Pick these up now. You can't reprint Kolaghan's Command unless it's in like a Modern Masters or like an Eternal Masters. Next set it could be in is 2019. This is going to creep up and up. It wouldn't surprise me if this time next year, you know, they're $15, $17. And pick up your Kolaghan's Commands for play, or if you want the foils and you can trade into them, you got some store credit.
Kolaghan's Command in the elevator this week on Tryhards. It's now time for 3 minutes to brew. He's been coaching in the classroom and teaching on the field. Which one will he give us here on 3 minutes to brew?
Gentlemen, I have a quiz for you to begin this 3 minutes to brew.
I'm ready.
I was told never take the quiz.
Well, you just have to bear with me here. Okay, what do the following cards have in common? Kari Zev, Mariki Ree Barrett, Rubinia Soul Singer.
They're all legends?
They're all female legends that cost 3.
Ooh, close. They are all female legends. They don't all cost 3. Rubinia
Soul
Singer is
4.
5. No, she's 5.
5? She's 2
yeah,
and a band?
Yeah, she's Bant. Bant and 2.
Oh, wow. Overpriced.
Okay. But what effect do all of these have in common?
Oh, they all give you a wrangle effect or a threaten effect.
A wrangle effect?
Well, I'm saying that because my stack of cards right here in front of me, Wrangle is on the top of my unfiled commons from Aether Revolt.
No, I love it. I love it. No, okay, so I'm going to bring back another one, a card, a legend that, or not a legend, another card that offers the same effect, which is to take control of another target creature, either for end of turn or for, you know, as long as this creature becomes remains tapped. Old Man from the Sea. Sean, this is a shout-out to you, celebrating a big birthday tomorrow. I had to get the Old Man from the Sea on the 3 minutes to brew tonight. Guys, what do you think is one of the best cards for taking control of other people's creatures, either temporarily or for the rest of the game until some other effect happens? Hurley, I'm going to start with you. Best card for taking control of someone else's creature. 3 minutes, go.
Mariki Barrett, I think, is by far the best one because you can utilize untap effects and tap effects to destroy their creatures. So you can take their creature, use it as much as you want, and I'm mainly eyeballing EDH here, but use it as much as you want, and then the minute that they either take it back or, you know, you're done with it, then you just untap it, boom, it's destroyed. I mean, I can't think of a more powerful effect than that, other than maybe sacrificing out the creature or doing whatever you want with it. People who play that deck in EDH, usually they're like, oh, they're going to steal my creatures and then sacrifice them all or kill them all. And it's just kind of like that, oh, this sucks type of thing. But I mean, now, especially with like Paradox Engine and Infiltrator, I think it's Infiltrator Alarm, and then a lot of the like Lorwyn Shadowmoor style untap effects, that's by far the most powerful one.
Sean, what about you? Best card for taking control of or stealing other creatures?
Well, Hurley won't know this because he's not as old as we are, but he's obviously Old Man of the Sea. I mean, that's got to be number one. Thank you. I still have mine. Thank you, Brian.
No, that was me. Thank you very much.
Oh, that, right. It was you. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, it was him. I got you the Judge Foil meddling mate.
Yes, that's right. I'm an old man, and I can't remember who did what, even though I knew it was all in the family here on the show. The best card is obviously not an actual creature for doing that thing. It's a spell, because it is both a control magic and a ramp spell if you're doing it correctly, and that's Treachery. You get to play it, take control of their creature, and then untap 5 lands. And if you're doing it correctly, one of those is a Karoo land, so you actually make mana. Treachery is both a steal and a mana ramp spell on one card. So Treachery, for my mind, the best steal effect that you can have.
This is so fun. I love doing this. This is such a good mechanic, and I was happy to see it on Kari Zev coming through. I think, for my money, the most powerful of these cards is something that's going to be modern legal, and that's Threads of Disloyalty. This was a card that saw a bunch of play maybe a year and a half ago, and this was a pretty serious card in some blue-white control shells. And it has since fallen out of favor. I mean, currently you can get one on Star City. They're near mints or out of stock, but you can get slightly played ones for $3, which is pretty incredible. Basically, for 2 blue and 1, I think this card has definite possibilities for making a return, and something I would love to cast on somebody's Death Shadow, either just kill it outright, a la Mariki Rebarret, or take control of it and do some serious damage with it if I'm at low life. These are all great things. Sean, tip of the beard to you. Have a great birthday tomorrow, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. By the time you hear this, that birthday will be in the rearview mirror. But I appreciate the sentiments from both my co-hosts. Guys, that brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. I'm going to save mine for the end because I've got something that this show has been about that I want to touch on before we head out for this week. So, Hurley, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
So I was trying to expand out, and obviously I talked about earlier, played in some modern leagues, trying to find what deck I wanted to play. I'm finding this that Mana Traders very, very handy to have. It's a little bit limiting, but it's very handy. You know, like Brian's like, why are we not playing the Red Green Ponza deck? I'm like, I don't know. Let's play it right now. And I kind of made a mental decision on Sunday. I'm going to step back a little bit. And like I said earlier, probably not do much in the way of Standard until Amonkhet comes out. Going to just play in some limited stuff and just take it easy. I've got some family stuff I've got to handle this week. I know the next couple weeks will be pretty slow outside of some Modern Masters drafting. That's kind of what I'm looking for at this point.
The most I've actually interacted with the game this week is obviously loaning out some more cards to people, because that just seems to be my role in life now, which I'm happy to do. I really am. Was actually logging on with you guys to watch Hurley, watching him click around and go through the Mana Traders thing and just be like, wow, you can get in a lot of practice on Magic Online, and I should just stop being an old man and just do this. And I wish I didn't have only a Macintosh computer, because I could just do it right now. But it was actually really fun for me to see how many different kinds of decks were on those modern leagues. You know, we saw the Red Green Ponds, and I don't think those words ever left my mouth of like, why aren't we playing the Red Green Ponds deck?
They did.
I really don't.
It may have been, hey, did you guys see this Red Green Ponds deck? And you're like, let's play it or something like that. But it was, you definitely had a hand in me playing that deck.
If you didn't see, it wasn't called, they didn't call it Red Green Ponza, unfortunately, but it did take ninth place at the Modern Open this weekend in Dallas. There was a Red Green, they call it Red Green Land Destruction. But anyway, no, that was actually pretty fun just to see kind of the lines that you can take with some other things, and you just being like, what should I play here? Should I play Acid Maw? Should I do Stone Rain and then play this? And I was just like, oh, geez, there's some actual decisions that need to be made with this deck. So that was actually pretty fun. Other than that, it's really been playing just a little bit with Clara, talking to her about the decks a little bit more. She's in that thing where, you know, she's a 10-year-old girl and she has all kinds of other interests. And so sometimes when I'm like, hey, you up for a game? And she's kind of like, yeah, maybe. And maybe, of course, from a 10-year-old means, not right now, Dad. I'm busy doing what I want to do. I've been kind of out of the game, I feel like, other than doing try hard. So my big goal for the next couple weeks, and with Modern Masters, this is going to be a little bit easier, I think, is to just jump back in. I want to get some more reps in with this Mardu Tokens deck in Modern. I want to get some draft or some sealed done with Modern Masters and just get back into the game and not just kind of talk about it, loan cards out to people. I actually want to play. Playing the game is so much fun. Builds that sense of community, talking to people, etc. So I'm really looking forward to getting back to that.
As for what I did to get better at Magic this week, we've talked about it on this show. Our focus is ambassadors to the game, trying to grow communities, grow the game, and grow the love of the game in those who are in it. The girl and I finally took up some of her coworkers to have a game night at our place over the weekend this past weekend. They thought it was a good idea to start off our first game together with Settlers of Catan. People were salty, and it was awesome. What came out of that, though, is what may be one of the best things. One of her coworkers, a young lady in her late 20s, obviously intelligent, obviously a passion for gaming. She was the one who we played her set of Catan for the evening. She is looking around the area for a competitive team. I didn't know they had a competitive Catan, like, national ranking. Of course they do. It's a game. We're nerds. We love to do that kind of stuff. And as the night wore on, she said, Sean, haven't I heard you play Magic? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And drinks had been had, of course, so everybody was a little looser, and she wants to get into it. So it looks like I'm going to be starting to tutor this earnest would-be player in her journey to learn Magic the Gathering. I did say that she was going to be required to cut her hair into the Star Wars Padawan style, and she didn't blink an eye. She said, make me the appointment, and I will go get that haircut.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
That's so crazy. This should be very interesting. She is highly intelligent, used to playing games, and this should go quickly, and I hope successfully, as we look to bring someone else into the sickness or fold of Magic the Gathering players. I'm a little bit worried because she kept asking me, what do I need to get? What do I need to get? And I said, look, hold on. I've got everything
checkbook.
We need
Your
to.
Checkbook.
I asked her, I said, when she said she wanted to play, I asked if she had disposable income. And she kind of looked at me and I said, you know, depending on how much you want to spend, it can vary from month to month or week to week, but you got to have some. You know, it's a hobby, it's a collectible card game. So there are some costs there. And she said, okay, what do I need to get? And I said, enjoy these first few moments of not having to get anything. I have everything we need to teach you the game. I said, and then once that happens, you know, I'll help you out. But then that's when you're going to want to start acquiring things. So don't burn up the debit card right now. Don't open the checkbook. There's going to be plenty of opportunities for that down the road. But I got you covered on just learning the game. And that's what we did to get better at Magic this week and what we're going to do. But there's one more thing for us to do before we wrap up. And that's not just to say thanks to MTGCast. They make this show, TryHards, possible. If you haven't made a donation or supported MTGCast, please think about doing that. Any amount you can do would be absolutely fabulous. But guys, by the time we do episode 44, TryHards Patreon will go live. That's right, St. Patrick's Day, the Patreon is set to go live. If you're listening on St. Patrick's Day, have another drink and then figure out how much you're going to support TryHards for each month. And if you're not sure, have another drink and keep drinking until you come to a money conclusion on what you can support TryHards for. It's going to be worth every penny. We talked about what we're looking forward to last week on the show. This week, plenty of news, and so we're going to get into some of the levels and what we want to do with it after it goes live next week. But just know, the Patreon going live on St. Patrick's Day. It will be live when we talk about it in depth next week. Until then, oh, you brave soul, may your NCAA bracket not already be busted, and have fun for St. Patrick's Day.